Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Para mi familia, siempre estoy en mi mejor momento. Por eso también quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solamente huevos de Eggland Best. Siempre tienen un sabor tan fresco y delicioso, con 6 veces más vitamina D, 10 veces más vitamina E y 25% menos grasas saturadas que los huevos comunes. Entonces, ¿por qué darle menos a tu familia cuando pueden tener lo mejor? Eggland's Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.
Spark something uncommon in this holiday season with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it much less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, and delight. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow, they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. It's actually quite extraordinary. Here's a few gifts that I found on their site that I really enjoyed that I'm picking up for my family this Christmas. My family is big into gardening, so I'm going to be getting this awesome mason jar indoor herb garden where my family will be able to grow multiple types of herbs like basil and thyme, and it's going to be great. I love growing my own veggies, so I want to be able to extend that ability to my family as well. You can also do this. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small artists and small independent businesses alike. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. From holiday host and hostess gifts to the coolest finds for your kids to hits that everyone from book lovers to diehard sports fans will love, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not the same old selections you find just anywhere. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/swamped. That's uncommongoods.com/swamped for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we are all out of the ordinary.
Why You Shouldn't Hitchhike by Hawthorne R.P. So before I begin my story, I should mention that I had an unorthodox childhood with my mother. My mother had a crippling drug addiction, and I struggled with homelessness most of my life. She often blamed her shortcomings on me because I was diagnosed with cancer very young. Luckily, I've been in remission long enough and technically considered cured. I have been cancer-free most of my life at this point. It took until my teenage years for me to get tracked down and taken out of her custody. I met my biological father briefly for 3 years, but he shortly died of a terminal illness I knew about when he adopted me. So, traveling and hitchhiking have always been prevalent in my life. So with my father recently deceased after my 18th birthday and the lack of education in my childhood, I found myself back on the road, hitchhiking once again. It was very tough, and I do not recommend it to anybody. My knowledge of hitchhiking comes out of necessity, and there is more danger than romance. I ended up making some friends with some Native American teenagers that were around my age at the time. After hanging out with them and their folks, they allowed me to stay in his bedroom in this abandoned house on the edge of their property. Even though it was very worn down, and you could tell the property was not very much lived in, I wish I could remember exactly where it was, but it was somewhere between Arizona and Nevada. It was enough for me. You walk into this rundown small house with a dirt floor and immediately get this overwhelming feeling of love and happiness. The room was full of beer cans, graphic novels, battery-powered radio and CD players, chairs, and remnants of past good time. I remember one of the other native people I was friends with had a chihuahua that was yippy and immediately calmed down as soon as it entered the house. I mean, the moment it walked in, it would stop. It was kind of creepy. We would get stoned, talk, and have a great time. I remember having a strange dream that first night, though. I cannot tell you what it was, besides that it was somewhat pleasant, but it almost felt like I was looking into the future for a moment. When I woke up, these elongated dog tracks pressed deeply into the floor like paws were noticeable, and they were an impossibly big size. They made a complete circle around my sleeping bag. Whatever it was, left a ring with a deer carved into the metal that wasn't there before. There is nothing impressive about the ring besides that it looks incredibly old. The handmade metal that it was made of was quite heavy, and was definitely for a male hand. My friend insisted it was a gift from the house, and I kept it for many, many years. Still, after I received my gift, I had this intense urge to go back home to Portland, where I was born, so that's what I did. I hitchhiked all the way up there. There were many ups and downs, but it seemed like this oversized ring that I kept on a chain around my neck seemingly protected me from most of the bad things that went down. Eventually, though, I unfortunately did lose the ring at a hospital. I had some mild injuries after I got into a slight wreck after getting out of a car hitchhiking, and I can't remember what happened to it from there. But I know the story might seem anticlimactic, and maybe it's a little more wholesome than scary, but I hope you share this one with everyone. The Worst Night of My Life by Anonymous. One of the worst nights of my life was in December 2013. And to put it bluntly, and in as few words as possible, a tough Christmas had been rough on my mental health. And it went straight up from a shouting match to me just dipping out. I stormed out of our family home, screaming profanities and swearing they'd never see me again. Yeah, I was definitely that pleasant teenager. Sure, I'd forgotten my phone and wallet, but I was too proud to return to get them. So, in my fit of only partially warranted rage, I somehow decided it would be a good idea to try to hitchhike to my friend's house so that I could stay the night there. I'd never actually hitchhiked before. I don't think I'd even held my thumb out for a cab at this point. But I stood on a stretch of Florida highway, trying to catch a passing driver's attention. To my surprise, someone pulled over rather quickly, and not the hippie bust rust bucket I'd been visualizing either. It was one of those high-end Chevys, and I'm not sure what model it was, but the guy behind the wheel looked like he had quite a few dollars. He was the archetypal rich dad type, with nothing to indicate that he was anything but friendly and well-meaning.
Hop in,
he calls out from the passenger window. I couldn't believe my luck. Not only was I about to hitchhike for the first time, which felt pretty cool, I'm not going to lie, but I was about to do it in style. So, I couldn't really tell the difference between a faux leather and the real deal, but when you're in an air-conditioned sedan with a new car smell at 17, who cares? I felt grown up as hell. So the guy asked me why I'm hitchhiking, and honestly, I may have given him a hopped-up version of events, which made me out to be quite the victim. Abusive parents, poor me, blah blah blah. Naturally, he took this as gospel and started telling me how his father was an alcoholic and how he sympathized with my situation. I asked him to take me as far down the road as he was possibly willing to do, because I had a friend about 30 minutes away. He says cool, and down the highway we go. As he's driving, we talk a lot more about family. He pops the glove box and boom, there's a picture of his kids. As I look at his little girls, he starts telling me how important he thinks family is, especially to those from the less than stable backgrounds. Then he said something that seemed entirely out of character. We're pulling into a gas station after he mentions needing to fill up, continuing to the family convo in segments, if that makes any sense. He'll stop talking 1 minute because he needs to focus on a turn or a lane switch, and then he carries on. So it was almost out of nowhere when he said something like,
"We have to protect our families from our own true nature."
I didn't know what to say at that moment, so I kind of just stayed quiet as he got out of the car and started filling up his tank. I had a few minutes to process those words, and the more I thought about them, the more I realized that hitchhiking might not have been such a good idea. When he returns after paying for the gas, there are quite a few moments as I'm still trying to figure out what he meant by his last little statement. So I just asked. I straight up asked him what he meant by it.
It'll be easier if I show you.
You ever wondered what it would feel like to tuck and roll out of a moving vehicle? Have you ever tried to imagine it because you're about to do it, and you're pretty sure it'd kill you at the speed you're traveling? Probably not. I hadn't until that moment right then and there. But somehow I convinced myself I was just being overly dramatic. So I stayed in the car. I didn't even ask for him to pull over or anything. Jesus, looking back at it, I wasn't sure what was going through my head at all. Just that I didn't want to be around this guy anymore. He had gone from friendly and average to moody and creepy at light speed.
You know, everyone has secrets, he said after pulling into a dark commercial lot, shutting the engine off.
So I imagine that line, spoken as creepily as you can imagine, meant that I was probably in big freaking trouble. I tried to keep my tone polite so I wouldn't freak this guy out or make him mad, but then he started freaking out. He showed me pictures of his kids, mentioned his wife, and even complained about how his in-laws were not nice to him. I knew this guy was a predator at this point. He saw someone vulnerable, who had a rough childhood or family background, and saw someone he could manipulate. It was the look in his eyes. Not this weak, I like you look, but it was like hunger. The way he wanted I could only describe it was like excitement for a feast. That's when he said something weird, because he put his hand on me. I can't remember exactly what he was saying, because at that moment I tuned everything out and absolutely went numb. The moment he put his hand on my thigh, I froze up like a deer in the headlights. I knew this could be a very bad moment. He slid his hand farther up my thigh, and after this, I'm not even really sure what happened next. I just remember slamming my fist into the glass window, and it popping all over me. I know I must have gotten the door open somehow too, because after some time, the headlights were behind me and I was running down the road. The predator that this guy was terrifying, and apparently he had a gun under his seat. I saw him pull it out and raise the gun toward me. Luckily, I don't think he ever shot, because I'm still here today. But I ran and ran and ran until I found the nearest place with the payphone and called my parents. I never hitchhiked after that, and I learned a very valuable lesson that night.
The Dangers of Hitchhiking by Sarah's Closet. I am now a 39-year-old female. And many, many moons ago, sometime between the ages of 15 and 17, when it was still the 90s, another girl and I used to hitchhike cross-country. When we first went on our little adventure, it never even crossed our minds that we might one day need some form of weapon on us for self-defense. So it was a long time before we got one, and this is a story of two instances before that time when we would have been in much better positions if we had a weapon. The first one was in Pueblo, Colorado. We were sitting at a gas station contemplating walking up to the highway when the random guy told us that he couldn't take us anywhere, but if we were willing to cook, he'd take us home and feed us and let us shower, etc. While an offer like this may be a red flag for most people, this was well into our time hitchhiking and relatively common. We discovered that the people that didn't converse much were the ones we should usually be worried about. This guy didn't say hardly anything the entire way there. And there was deep into the wilderness in the middle of the mountains. If you're familiar with Pueblo, you know the hills are far from there. So we were already getting the creeps just knowing how far from civilization we were headed. We finally get there and the guy is giving us both a weird feeling and we're not okay with this. We agree it isn't a good idea to stay. So less than 5 minutes after arriving at this middle of nowhere cabin in the woods, we tell him we've changed our minds and want to leave. He seems genuinely irritated, but agrees to take us back after some back and forth convincing. By this time, we have no clue where we are, or in which direction, and we are both getting pretty worried. And as we venture out into the woods again, we begin discussing with one another. The fact that it feels like it's taking longer to get back than it did to get there was really setting off alarms. We both start wondering if we are going back, or maybe we're going further into the wilderness. And to make it even worse, we have not spotted even one other passing vehicle this entire time. Nobody was heading in the direction that we were. So now the conversation is going towards what we might do if he's leading us further into the woods. We both agree that since there are two of us and only one of him, even if we are both beginning to panic and sweat, we can probably wait this out or take him if it needs be. Although this was still over 20 years ago, it feels like it took twice as long to return as it did to make it there. We did eventually make it back to the gas station we started at. He let us out, and we went on our way. The second instance was just outside of Sacramento, California. We had been traveling with a big fat trucker who was not conversational at all. Even as much as we tried prompting him to talk to us, he had little or nothing to say. We had been traveling in his truck for a few hours and we both had fallen asleep. Until my travel companion abruptly awakened me, the car had stopped on the side of the highway, and my friend was adamant about us exiting the vehicle immediately. So I asked her what was wrong, and she told me that she had been awakened by the truck driver feeling her breasts in her sleep. She said his exact words were,
"After all I've done for you, you can't even let me cop a feel."
So we got out of the truck, literally ran on the side of the highway, somewhere near Sacramento, but we walked away unharmed and almost entirely unviolated. And amazingly enough, out of nearly 3 years of hitchhiking cross-country together, those were the only two times anything remotely scary happened to us, and it was the best time of my entire life still to this day.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Disease hit hard this year, huh?
Yeah. Mother Nature threw the kitchen sink at us. Tar spots, southern rust. We had everything.
I didn't know if my fungicide would hold, but Miravis Neo really came through. Even with that dry spell, our yield monitor did not disappoint.
Seriously?
Yep, and with results like this, I'm sticking with it.
No matter what next season brings, protect your ROI with Miravis Neo. Call your retailer to lock in your supply today. Always read and follow label instructions.
The Hitchhiker Murders by Anonymous. Sonoma County, California is one of the most agriculturally productive areas in the entire country. It produces a massive amount of hops, grapes, prunes, apples, dairy, and poultry products every single year. This is down to the vast swaths of fertile land and the abundance of high-quality irrigation water. In addition to the vineyards and wineries that all call Sonoma home, one might mistake the county for being a little slice of paradise. But during the early 1970s, a series of horrifying events in the hills around Sonoma's largest city, Santa Rosa, would make this heavenly place seem more like a circle of hell. On February 4th, 1972, two middle school friends were returning from a visit to the Redwood Empire Ice Arena. Maureen Louise Sterling and Yvonne Lisa Weber, 12 years old, were last seen around 9 p.m. hitchhiking on Guerneville Road, northwest of Santa Rosa. Neither of the girls arrived home that night. The parents begged local authorities to find their girls, and find them they did. Their bodies were found December 28th, just a few miles north of Franz Valley. A single earring, orange beads, and a 14-karat gold necklace with a cross were found at the scene. The cause of death could not be determined from the skeletal remains. Then just a month later, 19-year-old student Kim Wendy Allen was given a ride by two men on the evening of March 4th, 1972. They last saw her approximately 5:20 p.m., hitchhiking to school and carrying a large wooden soy barrel with red Chinese characters. Her body was found the following day down an embankment in a creek bed. The two men who gave her a ride, one of whom was presented and passed a polygraph test, were ruled out as suspects. These hitchhiker murders were repeated as the years went by, but only a handful had a modus operandi that matched the previous murders. One in particular had an alarming additional detail that may shed some light on who the murderer or murderers were. Carolyn Nadine Davis, 14 years old, ran away from her home outside of Anderson in Shasta County on February 6, 1973, but disappeared on July 15th after being dropped off by her grandmother at the Garberville post office. She was last seen hitchhiking that afternoon near the highway in Garberville. Her body was discovered on July 31st, just meters from where the remains of Sterling and Weber had been found, 7 months prior. However, this time the cause of death would be determined. Coroners stated that it was an apparent cause of strychnine poisoning, 10 to 14 days before the body was discovered. A witchcraft symbol meaning carrier of spirits was found by her body. As was previously mentioned, an additional 8 unsolved murders of female victims who have been linked to the unknown murderer, and all happened to be hitchhikers. Yet, not a single conviction has ever been handed down in the connection with any of them. However, that doesn't mean there aren't a few prevailing theories on the murderer's true identity. Kenneth Bianchi and Angelo Buono Jr., the Hillside Stranglers of Los Angeles, were seriously considered suspects. The Hillside Strangler murders began with the deaths of 3 sex workers who were found strangled and dumped naked on hillsides northeast of Los Angeles between October and early November 1977. It was not until the deaths of 5 young women who were not sex workers but girls who had been abducted from middle-class neighborhoods that the media attention and subsequent Hillside Strangler moniker became prominent. However, there was insufficient evidence linking Bianchi or Buono to the Sonoma County murders, so we must look elsewhere for conclusive proof. Another suspect in this case was Frederick Manali, a 41-year-old Santa Rosa Junior College creative writing instructor. In August of 1976, Manali was involved in a fatal head-on collision on Highway 12. As CHP officers cleared the scene, they discovered something alarming. In addition to a large amount of creative writing work Manali had in his possession, police found that the instructor cultivated another form of creative drawing. But these weren't still life or landscape drawings, no. These were scenes depicting sadomasochistic acts committed by a young woman. Investigators were quickly able to identify the woman in question from the quality of the sketches. It was Kim Wendy Allen, the second victim in the series of murders. Yet, despite searches of Manali's home, investigators could not find a credible link between the sketches and the murders. Another suspect in this case was none other than the subject of a recent Netflix-made movie, Ted Bundy. After the prolific murderer's capture for similar crimes in Washington, Colorado, Utah, Florida, and Idaho, Ted Bundy was heavily suspected as the Sonoma County hitchhiker killer. The links between the naked bodies of the Sonoma victims and the extreme venereal nature of Bundy's crimes were obvious. It turned out that Bundy had apparently spent time in the neighboring Marin County, but was ruled out by a Sonoma County detective in the 1970s and again in the 1980s. This was down to detailed credit card records that reveal Bundy was up in the coast of Washington State on the dates of some of these disappearances. An additional suspect in the murders is another famous name, the Zodiac Killer. Investigators were forced to consider the Zodiac Killer as a possible perpetrator due to similarities between an unknown symbol on his January 29, 1974 exorcist letter to the San Francisco Chronicle, in which he claims 37 victims, and the Chinese characters on the missing soy barrel carried by Kim Allen. Also, the Zodiac had written a letter delivered to the San Francisco Chronicle on November 9, 1969. In it, he intended to vary his modus operandi to confuse detectives and evade capture. "I shall no longer announce to anyone when I commit my murders, and they shall look like routine robberies, killings of anger, and a few fake accidents, etc." Naturally, the consideration of the Zodiac Killer leads us to one Arthur Lee Allen. Allen owned a mobile home at Sunset Trailer Park in Santa Rosa at the time of the murders. He was also fired from his Valley Springs Elementary School teaching position for suspected child molestation in 1968. Allen was arrested on September 27, 1974 by the Sonoma County Sheriff's Office and charged with child molestation in an unrelated case involving a young boy. He pleaded guilty on March 14, 1975, and was imprisoned at Ascadero State Hospital until late 1977. This would indeed match the period for some of the murders. What's more, Robert Graysmith, in his book Zodiac Unmasked, claims that a Sonoma County sheriff revealed that chipmunk hairs were found on all of the Santa Rosa hitchhiker victims, and that Allen had been collecting and studying the same species. Since the bodies were dumped outdoors, it would be possible that a few chipmunk hairs might be present on one or two of them, but probably not all of them. Allen was the main suspect in the Zodiac case for over 30 years until his DNA was compared to a partial DNA profile obtained from saliva recovered on the underside of a postage stamp and envelopes from verified Zodiac letters. Results were a conclusive non-match. Fingerprints and blood retrieved from the taxi cab of Zodiac murder victim Paul Stein, a writer's palm print found on the Zodiac letter of January 29, 1974, and handwriting examples failed to identify Allen as Zodiac. In practice, this evidence would have exonerated Allen should he have ever stood trial for the charges. So we are forced to look elsewhere for clues to the murderer's identity. But given that, almost 50 years later, each murder remains distinctly clear. Just who was murdering hitchhikers in the hills of Santa Rosa? An Unexplainable Hitchhiking Experience by Lucid Lotus. Hey, Swamp Dweller. My family has had some insane experiences with the supernatural. We are a family of women with psychic abilities and men that have just had some crazy, unexplainable occurrences. Today, I wanted to share a story with you and your followers. Something that did not happen to me, but to my uncle. He didn't use the internet often, and didn't even know how to get his story out there. So I'm submitting it on his behalf. Without further ado, this story takes place in Canada, specifically on the outskirts of Thunder Bay in the year of 2003. My uncle has always been what most would call a drifter. He was seldom in one spot for too long and would get around by hitchhiking. Christmas of 2002, leading into January of 2003, my uncle had traveled from Regina to Ontario to spend the holidays with our family. We were all located in Ontario. As the holiday season passed, he returned to Regina in the most typical fashion, hitchhiking. He had an uneventful trip until he made it to Thunder Bay. He was dropped off by a transport trucker on a lonely highway outside of Thunder Bay as far as the trucker could take him. He had wandered further and further down the highway with rarely any vehicles passing. None willing to stop and give him a ride. It was between 2 and 3 a.m. and he was frozen and started to slow his pace and take a lot of breaks along the way. He ended up standing in one spot for quite some time to try to warm himself and conserve energy. It was under a street light, and his particular area was well lit. Suddenly, he heard branches snapping behind him in the tree line, about a half a football field length away. He chalked it up to a deer or a moose, as the deep Canadian forest is full of wildlife that is quite active at night. He then heard what sounded like a groaning sound, muffled and almost sounded human, but not quite. He decided to continue walking and would speed up his pace between streetlights because he just had an eerie feeling something was wrong. And he felt something in the pit of his stomach. He could hear whatever this was in the tree line following him as he moved, but it seemed to remain in the tree line. Branches cracked, and between cracks he could hear grunts and groans. Then it hit him, the grotesque smell of raw meat that had been baking in the sun mixed with that smell of sewage. He could see a moving figure that was almost white, with patchy fur. He had never been so afraid in his whole life. With no way to call for help, and the isolating feeling brought on by the realization that not a single vehicle had passed in hours, he felt helpless and feared for his life. He tried to keep moving, faster and faster. The creature kept his pace and remained in the tree line, almost as if it was playing with him. He stopped as he approached the last light on the street. This stretch of highway did not have many more lights after this, and the ones that were after this didn't seemingly work. He felt the most fear he had ever felt in his life at this point. The streetlight's dim light was the only sense of safety he could grasp, and now, it was utterly gone. He turned to face the tree line and noticed that he couldn't see or hear anything, and thought the creature had maybe given up on him as prey. He almost sighed a breath of relief before hearing a branch snap directly in front of him. What came next has stuck with him, a shriek so loud and shrill that it made his entire body freeze up, rendering him in shock paralysis. Thankfully, headlights approached and came to a halt beside him. He hadn't even noticed the truck come near his way. He didn't even have the capacity to turn and try to catch a ride. He was still paralyzed with fear. It was a lovely man in a large black Jeep. The gentleman screamed at my uncle to get in the vehicle. He did not protest and jumped right in. Naturally, not his first instinct, as he prefers to get a feel for the person before just jumping in a car, but the man had a tone of urgency and fear, and my uncle didn't want to be a meal for whatever the hell that creature was. As soon as my uncle jumped into the Jeep, the man sped off and then parked about 20 minutes up the road and explained to my uncle what he had seen when he was approaching him on the highway. My uncle was grateful to the man. Whatever he had seen, based on the description in my uncle's in-depth research of cryptids following this experience, they all believed that it may have been some sort of Wendigo, or something of that nature. I'm just glad he wasn't a victim of a Wendigo attack. I work at a gun shop in a city, but due to its popularity, I won't mention its name or my coworkers' names. I'm going to start by giving you a little backstory of my compadres. We'll start out with one we'll call Matt, who doesn't trust easily. He's basically someone who, while kind, is suspicious of everyone till given a reason not to be. Next, we have Jimmy, a former Marine who served two tours in the Middle East. Next, we have John and Bob. Bob was our gun safe guy, while John was the shift lead for the night. I, on the other hand, had just gotten out of the AIT in basic training for the National Guard. On the night this story takes place, we're closing up and had finished our other work as well. While I had completed all my tasks, I thought I'd wait up for John and Matt to finish his work before heading home. The team is rather close-knit at the store, and considered one as a family in many regards. Soon enough, Jimmy and Bob walk in and Jimmy asks permissions to go home, at which he is given the okay and leaves. Jimmy leaves and the alarm goes off, which prompts Bob to rush outside while John and I head for the alarm system. The alarm blaring is coming from our classroom, which is across a lot in a different building altogether. After taking a look at the classroom from the lot, we see the doors are open, but not much else appears to be going on. That's when I hear Jimmy shout across the way that he'll check it out. Keep in mind, he's carrying a firearm, with Bob right behind him. John, meanwhile, has left to call the cops. Knowing Bob doesn't have a weapon, I figured I'd join him. This is where Jimmy and I's CQB training comes into play. I knew Jimmy had more experience, so I let him take point, as I also unholstered my weapon and readied it. Bob hands Jimmy a flashlight, at which point Jimmy shouts to the intruder that we're in a gun store and we will shoot. I signal to Jimmy that we are ready, and soon Bob appears and opens the door and we enter the property. The classroom's layout is fairly basic. There's three desks on the left and right walls, and three in the middle with a bathroom door on the right and a door to the ammo storage on the left. The second Bob opens up, we rush in. I head to the bathroom and Jimmy goes straight for the ammo storage room. I bust into the bathroom, but I find nothing. Jimmy has now opened the ammo storage room, which has a bathroom on the left side, and a locked, gated fence with barbed wire on the top right. Jimmy finds no one in the bathroom, and by the time he goes to check the fenced area, I have rejoined him, already looking out into the darkness. Bob hits the lights and we inform anyone outside that once again we are armed and will fire. Looking at the fence, we find the lock is snapped, but it's still hanging from the fence. Jimmy pulls the lock off and informs me I hear gunshots to shoot through the classroom wall. I move to the position, ready to do what needs to be done. Jimmy turns the corner, and then, nothing. Relieved, I begin to relax when I hear Justin scream,
"Tanner!"
while pointing towards the loft. I'm shocked to see that we have a loft, as I didn't realize we did at the time. Moving in, we announce ourselves again as Jimmy now climbs the ladder. At the top, I hear him say, "What the?" At which point I ask him if everything is alright. He says yes, but he informs we need to get John. Now! Bob and I head up to see what Jimmy is on about. Once up the ladder, we see in blood on the wall is a message. "Teehee." We sit there in silence until the police arrive. I head back to the store, realizing we left Matt alone. When I get there, I'm greeted by an AR-15 pointed at my head. As it turns out, it was just Matt, and when he realized it was me, he lowered his weapon and asked where I was. I fill him in on the whole situation with the alarm.
This was when Matt, who is a big dude and isn't scared easily, turns white and asks me if I heard it. Asked if I heard what? That was when he said he kept hearing a grown man repeating, "Tee-hee," over and over again, but he couldn't pinpoint the sound or find where it was coming from. I hadn't told him about the wall just yet, and when I did, he seemed weirded out and a little shaken. The cops arrived roughly 8 minutes after John called them. We didn't bring up any of the Teehee stuff again until the next day, when the owner came in. Apparently, back in 2006, a former employee had cut his hand and wrote Teehee on the wall in blood, just before committing suicide. Now every time I hear those words, I get chills. My story begins in 2010. I was a little shit who had only one brother. My parents were going through a divorce at the time, and my mother was having an affair. I woke up one night and turned on the television set as I couldn't sleep. I was bored and hungry, so I ate some cereal when my dad came downstairs and into the room with his hands over his face. Looking back on it now, his voice was quite shaky. My dad asked me to take our Pomeranian out for a walk. Excited, I rushed out the house and took our dog for a walk. My father never allowed me to do this in the past, and being a kid, it was a big event for me. My parents were the type to work a lot and provide for us. As such, I spent a lot of time at the babysitter's. My brother was at the babysitter's on this night, and I was alone with my mom and dad. My mom was inside the house, and I decided to head to the neighbors and chill under their tree. This was something my parents didn't like me doing, but when I did, they came over and spent time with me. Thinking this was a sure plan and wanting my parents' attention, I waited under the tree. They never came. I sat there for maybe 20 more minutes when I heard the sound of someone knocking on a door. It turns out it wasn't a door. By the time I realized it wasn't a door, I didn't think anything of it, as I was six. Growing bored, I tried the door. It was locked. Maybe a side door, I thought. They were all locked too. I began feeling shaky at this point. What if my parents had forgotten about me? I started panicking and banging on our door. I didn't get an answer, so I went to the neighbors once again for help. I explained to them my situation, and they got very scared before calling the police. The neighbors sent me to their guest bedroom and wouldn't let me leave. The room I was in had nothing in it. Eventually, a police officer came in and asked me for a statement. I told them about the knocking I heard and explained how I tried to get inside. The officer shook his head, and soon after, a policewoman came and took me to McDonald's. I remember she was very beautiful. Soon after this, I was taken to my babysitter's house. About a year later, my grandma tried adopting us, but she died of a heart attack after losing the court case for custody. Another year went by, and my foster parents at the time became very abusive. They gave their biological daughter everything she wanted, and they were just cruel to me. I no longer live with them, thankfully. As far as the day in question of this story goes, it turns out after my dad sent me to walk the dog, he locked the place, went upstairs, shot my mom, and then committed suicide.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm 26 and currently live in Long Island, New York. I've skateboarded my entire life and have no intentions of ever quitting, as it's the one thing that makes me happiest in life. 3 years ago, I planned to meet up with my friend in Astoria, Queens, to get a late night shred fest on at the skate park. I usually got out of work pretty late, around 11 p.m., so I didn't meet up with my friend until midnight. My friend and I were in our car, rolling up to the parking lot when a black four-door Hyundai with tinted windows suddenly pulls up in front of us and stops. This was extremely odd, as the parking lot itself was empty and the size of a football field. I was thinking, why park right in front of us? Although initially weirded out, we decided to shake it off and continue onward to our goal. This was when the car began to make slow circles around my friend and I. I'm not gonna lie, I was worried at this point. I asked my friend if he was seeing this, but he seemed completely unconcerned and just kept rolling up. I was still concerned and figured the only way I was going to shake my worry was to confront the people in the car. This terrified me, but I'd never be able to enjoy myself if I didn't know what the heck they were doing. I got on my board and rolled towards the car. The second I made any real progress, the car peeled out and left the lot. After this, we enjoy the skate park to ourselves for the next 3 hours. I'm happy I always have my board as a weapon in worst case scenario, but the event of that night, though nothing ultimately happened to us, left me feeling the most vulnerable I've ever felt in my life. If you're ever out late, be careful. You never know who you'll run into. I'm a female living in the UK. And this is my experience with the creeper on the way home. I was about 14 when this all happened, and on this particular day I'd spent all day with my friends in a local park. To give you an idea of the layout and distance, the park sits about a half hour away from home. The day now over, my friends and I began our trek home. Most of my friends live much closer to the park, and so they departed early. It was still daylight out, so I was okay and comfortable heading home on my own, and assured them I'd be okay. Looking back, I wish I'd had someone come home with me. Once I said my goodbyes to my friends, I began the quite familiar walk toward home. You see, I've walked this home probably a billion times, and never once felt unsafe or any sort of threat. Today was different. Looking up, I see a guy across the street, hood up, just standing there. It was weird as it wasn't rainy, windy, or even cold. Still, I did as so many do and shrugged this off as an initial warning feeling I was getting off the dude. The dude began walking slowly, but determinedly, so I went diagonally across the street to put distance between us just to be safe. I was just about to take a shortcut, one that would have gotten me home in 10 minutes, when I got this really sudden paranoia. It was a gut feeling to turn around. I listened to this gut feeling, and while what I saw terrified me, I'm glad I did. Turning, I saw that this dude was across the street suddenly within arm's reach of me. The guy froze the moment I spun around, and suddenly, we stared at one another down for just a moment. I remember although the guy was startled by my sudden turn, he had the most unsettling look on his face. I've never seen anybody make that look before. Terrified and unsure of what to do, I decided to change paths to the main road, but the moment I started to turn, he grabbed me by the arm and smirked before pulling me into the shortcut. I'm not sure if it was adrenaline, shock, or something else entirely, but I immediately began fighting back with all my might. I was soon able to break free and run to a pub about a minute away from the shortcut for help. Once inside, the owner and patrons could see how scared and shaken up I was, and they called the police for me. After taking a statement, the police went door to door to find my attacker. They never found him. I was very fortunate to have escaped that day, in what I believe was likely, probably a life-threatening situation. I shake every time that I think of this experience, and what would have happened if I had not broken free from my attacker. I'm quite sure if I hadn't escaped, I wouldn't be here to tell my story today. Hello. So I have never shared this experience, and it isn't too long, but it is frightening nonetheless. It was Christmas Eve, and I was home with my twin sister Violet, and we were both 17. This is important to note because we have heard all the stories about stranger danger and all sorts of things. Anyway, our parents were out doing last-minute Christmas shopping, and we were home really not doing much of anything. It was late at night, so not much was going on. I was sitting on my bed listening to music, and Violet comes in with our golden retriever, Luna. Luna is a very good dog and never barks at anything. This time, however, she was scared of something and she was growling and barking. Violet told me there was someone standing out on the snowy street taking pictures of our house. I get chills down my back and we go to investigate. My house has a lot of windows, and we live in a pretty suburban area, so it wasn't uncommon to see someone on the street, even late at night. I have to walk to the windows, and then I see a very large man dressed in black, taking pictures in the street, of our house. He was larger than a normal human. He had a black coat, black hat, black sunglasses, and black pants. Now, I know it wasn't the best decision, but Violet was freaked out and Luna was barking and trying to get through the window. So I ultimately open it and yell at him to screw off and go somewhere else. He stops taking pictures, and he just stares at us. He then continues to take pictures. I then start to hear him rapidly laughing and mumbling to himself. We lock the doors and windows and go back to my room and we call the police, but the operator said there was nothing they could really do since he wasn't causing a disturbance or threatening us. I know, helpful, right? So I call our parents and they say they'll be back in 10 minutes. We heard footsteps you'd usually hear when someone walks in the snow, and hear some sort of scraping along the side of the house. So we are pretty much freaking out, and Luna is barking like there's no tomorrow, and everything just stops. We wait and hear our parents come through the door. We are instantly relieved. Our parents say there was nobody outside, but due to the heavy snow, there were footprints that led from the street to the side of our house, and then they just stopped. Violet and I were thoroughly confused, and after a very angry call to the police, they came and investigated and basically found nothing except for the aforementioned footprints. There was some sort of scrape marks on the side of our house. The police believe it was caused by some sort of sharp metal object. They took our statements, but nothing ever really came of it. So this happened a few years ago when I first started working at a publishing company that published global automotive magazines. I learned shortly after that many of our subscribers were incarcerated men. One day, we received a letter from a prisoner who didn't get his monthly issue. This was commonplace since some inmates can only communicate by mail. He should have received his magazine by the time we got this letter. So I stuck the copy in a priority envelope and included another freebie magazine for the inconvenience. I also included a sticky note, which I wrote something like, "Sorry about the inconvenience, we've included an extra issue for the trouble. Thank you, my name, with company name." I shipped the envelope and didn't think of it again, until a few weeks later when my boss gave me a letter addressed to me specifically, but at my work address. I instantly recognized the inmate's name in his distinct cursive writing. I can't remember specifics now, I'll explain why in a minute, but the letter was basically him thanking me profusely for sending that issue. I felt bad because I figured his life wasn't great, being incarcerated, and he said how lonely he was in prison and how it meant so much that I wrote to him. Then, he started asking if I could just write to him at this point. But, I was feeling quite sorry for the guy, and also pretty unnerved. So I decided to do an inmate search to see what crime he committed. I normally wouldn't do this for privacy reasons, but he wrote me a personal letter, so I went for it. That's when I discovered that in the early 1990s he was babysitting his live-in girlfriend's toddler son. Apparently, he was coming down from a heroin and alcohol bender and struck the child several times, hands forcefully enough to cause internal injuries, which resulted to his death. Coincidentally, my son was around the same age as the child at the time. One detail the report I read about stood out. The child was clad in just a Ninja Turtle shirt and diaper when his mother rushed him to the hospital. My son was and is also really into Ninja Turtles, so that part just hit way too close to me. I was instantly saddened beyond measure and physically sick to my stomach. I tore up the letter and took it to a dumpster off my work property to dispose of it. I felt like I could feel the bad energy emanating from it. I felt manipulated and regretted that I'd ever felt sorry for a man who committed such a horrendous act. I don't remember the inmate's name because I was hastily disposed of his letter. I've tried to look up the case again with the details, but I have never found anything quite exact to the case. My buddy has this weird property, where weird things happen all the time. Unexplained noises and lights are normal there. This is just one of my weird stories from my life thus far. So this happened many years ago around when I was 10 or so. My buddy, I'll call him Gary, and I would often go to his place because we had a big property there. Lots of space for 10 years old to run around and play army and whatnot. They had this old tree that his dad referred to as the witch tree, because it was this old tree that never had leaves on it, but it wasn't dead. His house always had this creepy vibe to it, and I had seen orbs in the odd mist. I didn't like being alone in that house. So one calm winter day, we were running around the yard exploring as we always did, when my buddy, being the smartass he was, dared me to go and touch the tree. Of course, I had to prove a point that I was not a girl and I was a tough 10-year-old, and started over the frozen swamp to touch it. As soon as I stepped on the swamp, the wind picked up and continued to blow harder and harder the closer I got to the tree. I was a couple of feet from the tree, wind howling, when I reached out my hand and touched the tree. As soon as I touched the tree, the wind went from 80 kilometers an hour to dead still. It freaked us out, so we noped out of there. The tree is still there, having survived tornadoes and countless storms. I want to check it out again when I go there next, but I'm kind of scared of what will happen. I'm a 13-year-old female, and it was only a few months ago when this happened. I was on a hockey trip with the rest of my family. I don't play, but my siblings do. I'm generally a quiet person. I have social anxiety and I don't react well to situations with people complimenting me or anything. My family had just pulled into a rest stop I was very familiar with. I was walking in to get a drink with my little sister who is 9 when she ran ahead of me. I didn't care much, but I wish she had stayed by my side because not even a few seconds later, a Caucasian male who looked to be in his mid-40s honked his horn at me. I instantly jumped back because I was right next to his car, which was a red 4-door sedan. He started telling me how pretty I was and how I should hop into the car. Being the unsocial person I am, I walked away with no reply. I ran inside to go meet up with my little sister. I'm pretty close with her, so I laughed about how what just happened and told her about it. We didn't think much of it and left as soon as we came. The man made crude gestures to me as I walked back to my other siblings. I have 2 sisters and 1 brother. My brother is pretty intimidating and 16, while my sister is 15 and not intimidating. They both play hockey and are stronger than me. My family drove off and started to go to the hotel we were staying at. It was an hour or two away, so after a while we stopped at another rest stop so I and my siblings could stretch. I had already forgotten about the encounter with the man when I noticed a car pull in. It was a red 4-door sedan. I didn't pay too much attention to it at first, until I walked into the restroom area. A man followed me in and just sat on the bench like he was waiting for someone. Wanting to avoid eye contact or talking, I pulled my little sister next to me and just spoke about video games with her. I waited until she was done to walk out with her, but my mom walked in and told me to go back to the car. I always avoid talking to strangers, and I get really nervous if someone says hi to me, and I try to avoid contact with them, As I was walking back out, the man followed me. He was around the same height as me. I'm 5'8". He walked next to me and whispered into my ear something along the lines of, "You look good tied to my bed." I didn't completely remember what he said. I just tensed up and ran for my car, jumping into the back seat. I was scared now, but because I was an idiot, I only texted my friend about it. She told me if some random creep, then not to worry about it. I did as she said and forget about it. I thought that was the end of it for the encounters. Once my family got to our hotel, we checked in and went to the ice rink. We took longer than we thought, so we had to be at the rink immediately. I began to forget the man again. It was the start of the second period, and I was sitting outside the actual rink with my sister. I don't bother watching, at least not until now. My sister and I were playing some multiplayer game when a man sat right next to me and asked what I was playing. I got extremely uncomfortable and moved away only to have him move closer. He began asking me if I had a boyfriend, and I just pointed to my ear to pretend I was deaf. It was pretty stupid looking back, but I had a plan if he believed me. I don't know how much sign language he knows, but I know enough to pass a lie. Sadly, he didn't buy it and continued to ask. I stayed silent, ignoring him, until he put his cold hand on my thigh. I was wearing leggings, so I felt how cold his hand was. I jumped at it, and he, in turn, squeezed it. In the game my sister and I were playing, we could message things, so I quickly looked at her and wrote in the chat, "Ask me to go to the bar with you." She looked at me and realized what was going on. She walked over to me and told me that she had to go to the bathroom. We hid in the bathroom for a while until the game was over. I didn't see him until the next game was going, which was the next day. My sister had a fever that day, so I volunteered to stay with her at the hotel. I only really did it to avoid that man again. It was a few minutes later when I heard a knock at our door. At this time, my little sister was downstairs getting breakfast in the hotel. I assumed it was her and opened the door. I hated what I saw instead of my sister. The same man as before, and I was horrified. His face had a horrible grin on it. Before he could say anything, I slammed the door and decided it was a good time to call the police. I was crying at that point as I sat against the door and called the police. They arrived shortly after and the man was arrested. It turns out he had been taking pictures of me the whole trip. He had been following me the whole time, even when I was swimming with my siblings. From then on, I don't ever walk alone. I hate it. I just really hope I never see him again. It was the second scariest thing in my entire life so far.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home. Thanks to the VA home loan.
A new lease on life. The best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
And education and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I developed because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
I was 24 at the time and my name is Mitchell. I live in Kenora, Ontario, Canada. It was August, I think the 20th of 2015. I had just finished breaking up with one of my best friends. He was on the heroin and the mess, and I couldn't stand to be around him, so I told him to screw off. As I left his house, I was angry because I thought how many times he was carrying drugs on him when we were hanging out. As I was driving home, I see that there's a train in front of me, and it's blocking the road. So I'll wait for 5 minutes waiting for the train to go by, but it never does. So I turn my truck around and start driving around the train. There's an hour wait to get home, and it's a bit of a long ride. Maybe like an hour longer anyway, as I was driving home. I passed by an old Native American burial ground, and I slowed down, out of respect, because I hoped that they were okay, and they were better off being dead in the ground. I get past the burial ground and another 15 feet up when I see what looks like a wolf standing in the middle of the road. I slow down and come to a complete stop. I'm waiting for the wolf to cross the road or something, and it's just standing there, so I honk my horn. Nothing happens. I honk my horn again. Nothing. So I try revving my engine to get him to move. Nothing happened. Finally, I put my truck in park, roll down my window, and I literally yelled, "Move, you stupid wolf!" That's when it turned and looked at me. Its eyes were pure red, like a demon. I pulled my head back in, rolled up the window, and turned off my lights. I noticed the wolf's eyes are still red, and that's when I started getting a bit scared. I watched it come close to my truck, snarling and growling and drooling at this point. There's something about it that was giving me chills. I was so scared that deep down I literally thought I was going to die. I thought that he was going to get into my truck, and I put my head down, starting to pray to God or whoever was listening to please let me live. That's when I noticed the growling stopped. I looked up and the wolf wasn't there. I looked to my left, and I looked to my right, and back and front, but nothing. Then I looked to my back and the wolf was standing there in the bed of my truck. Immediately that dread returned to me, but nothing happened. A sense of safety came over me when I looked at it. Its eyes turned back to the normal color of brown. I then watched it jump out of the back of my truck, and it went along the road. I got my truck started again and hauled ass out of there. I watched it fade into nothing. When I went to sleep that night, nothing bad happened, and to this day, I think about that spirit wolf all the time. A few years ago, I was living alone in a little house which had a heavy back door that would swell up some after it rained, and get really tough to open and make a lot of noise. Late one night I had passed out on my sofa in the living room on the opposite side of the house, but woke up to something, which I now assume was the back door being opened. I'm an idiot, by the way, and never used to lock the back door. Netflix was still blaring on my laptop as I slowly squinted my eyes open and realized there was a black outline of someone standing still in the hallway looking down at me. They were not very large or tall based on how much space they took up in the doorframe. Being completely disoriented in my waking state, my mind latched on to the first thought that came to mind, which was that it must be my girlfriend. I was naked at the time and pulled my blanket back, with my legs sprawled and my junk hanging out, and called to her in my best, deep, sexy voice, "Come here, baby." Upon discovering a naked 6-foot-plus 200-pound man beckoning to them with his genitalia, the not-my-girlfriend person immediately turned on their heel, revealing a large backpack, and booked it for the back door. By the time I stumbled up to the door, all I could hear was them taking off into the darkness at a full sprint. I can only guess, based on their height, that they did not come here with the bold intention of being the little spoon.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Como mamá, siempre quiero lo mejor para mi familia. Por eso quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solo huevos Eggland's Best. No importa cómo los cocines, siempre saben frescos y deliciosos. Y tienen más vitaminas D y E y el doble de omega 3 que los huevos regulares. Entonces, ¿por qué conformarte con menos cuando puedes tener lo mejor? Eggland's Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.